who the heck regulates our pet food? And what does it mean when my food is AFCO approved? Hello there, I'm your host and title wizard, Trinity. This is the 9th lesson in my podcast, The Animal Nutrition Wizard, and it's all about how pet food regulation works. In a previous episode, I mentioned that I would go into more detail on AFCO at a later time, so this is it. This might sound like a boring topic, but when I learned about the pet food industry, how it's regulated, I found it to be very eye-opening. These organizations that are regulating pet food are just as important as the ingredients that are going into the pet food, and I believe it's important that we know the back end of what goes on before that bag of kibble or a can of dog food or cat food gets onto the shelf. It puts things into a more realistic perspective, and knowing helps us feel more empowered to make good choices for our pet's nutritional health. But just before we dig into that together, I would like to say thank you to the first patron, Jeremiah, on my Patreon page, which is patreon.com/askthewizard. He is my partner and biggest supporter, and he will be the first to receive an exclusive hoodie with the Animal Nutrition Wizard logo designed by my friend and poet, Amanda Hawk, as well as an exclusive sticker. The logo right now is still in the works. It's something that one of my best friends offered to create for me, and it's essentially going to be a little drawing with watercolor of my dog hopping on top of a crystal ball, which is sitting on top of a big book. So it's going to be very adorable, and that's going to be my logo once it's all tweaked and made perfect. If you would like to know where to go to ask me questions or to listen to my live Q&As, find free guides on pet nutrition that I've created, or where you can go to support the Animal Nutrition Wizard so that I can continue providing free coaching, consultations, guides, podcasts, and more, stay tuned at the end of the episode for links and descriptions. All right, let's dig in. So, who regulates the pet food industry? There are several different agencies involved in regulating pet food, but it may surprise you to learn that it's largely self-regulated. The members of a great deal of organizations that help create the definitions and guidelines set in place to govern how our pet food is processed and labeled includes many of the largest pet food manufacturers themselves. There is AFCO, which I'm sure you've heard of before, which is a private, non-profit organization that consists mainly of government feed inspection officials, and which is advised by pet industry and pet advocacy groups. They create model bills, which are used by most states to regulate pet food, and they work very closely with the FDA. AFCO has no enforcement power, and adhering to AFCO guidelines is strictly voluntary. AFCO stands for, by the way, American Association of Feed Control Officials. There's also the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, combined with the Center for Veterinary Medicine, or CVM, which regulates all pet foods involved in interstate commerce and all the pet foods sold within the states. There is the U.S. Department of Agriculture, or USDA, which regulates imported pet foods, inspects facilities where animal research is done, and also has a voluntary inspection system for pet food manufacturers. There is the Federal Trade Commission, or the FTC, which regulates print and electronic advertising of pet foods. And there is the National Research Council, or the NRC, which is a private organization that was created under the National Academy of Science, or NAS. They advise government agencies on scientific matters, including pet nutrition, and they publish the Nutrient Requirements of Dogs and Cats, which is a collection of current nutritional scientific findings and recommendations. All of this would probably make it seem like pet food is very closely watched and safety inspected and regulated, but there's a lot more to be aware of. Although there are rules and regulations that vary from state to state from a number of different agencies, which I just outlined a moment ago, it is indeed mostly self-regulated. Let's dig into that a bit more. Ideally, we'd probably prefer our pets' food to be regulated by government agencies, but that's not really the case. It is the case, however, that the very same people that are marketing and profiting from the food are in large part the ones that are also setting safety and regulatory standards. There are a number of agencies involved in this, including the biggest and most well-known ones that I mentioned previously, and this can all create confusion for us as consumers, but it also leaves the door a little too open for manufacturers to sell products with questionable and relatively ambiguous ingredients. At the federal level, the FDA and the USDA are in charge of pet food safety. The FDA is also involved in the processing and packaging of pet foods under the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, which requires pet food labels to be safe to eat, produced under sanitary conditions, contain no harmful substances, and to be truthfully labeled. All pet food plants are subject to FDA inspection, and the USDA, as I said earlier, offers voluntary inspection as well, which allow manufacturers to attach a USDA seal to their products and say that their product is a USDA certified product. But you may be surprised to know that pet foods don't actually require FDA approval before going to market. As long as the food doesn't contain drugs or specific health claims, it doesn't need it. The FDA relies on generally recognized as safe, or GRAS, or GRAS ingredients, to justify this lack of inspection of pet foods before being sold to consumers. So one could manufacture a pet food using GRAS ingredients and sell it at the pet store without any approval whatsoever. As long as the FDA doesn't find out your food is hurting pets, you won't be breaking any laws. However, if the regulations are violated, then there are penalties after the damage is already done, so to speak. And that can range from fines, to product seizures, to warning letters, to prison time. But usually manufacturers will recall their products voluntarily before the FDA investigates, which also helps to avoid bad publicity and lost sales. Something else to note is that the FDA does not routinely inspect imported pet foods, which is concerning as pet foods imported into the US often don't require the same safety measures as US manufacturers, which we know already have safety violations and recalls all the time. While the FDA is concerned with the overall safety of the food, they don't have the manpower to regulate the industry. There was a report in 2008 that showed they only inspected 1% of imported foods. So rather than forming its own rules and regulations, the FDA regulates pet foods through cooperative relationships. The CVM in the FDA is responsible for monitoring animal drugs, medicated animal feeds and food additives, and health claims, like stating a food treats or prevents a certain disease. Those are considered drug claims and are usually prohibited by the CVM unless they're related to a nutritional value. But the Nutrition Labeling and Education Act, which was signed into law on November 8, 1990 by President George H.W. Bush, actually overrides these regulations, so the CVM allows meaningful health information on pet food. So that means claims like helps control tartar are permitted on pet food labels. The FDA itself monitors food branding, ingredient safety, and health claims. They do not, however, set any nutritional standards, label requirements, or feeding trial protocols. That's all done by AFCO. AFCO publishes model bills, which are essentially guidelines, and they provide ingredient definitions. Pretty much most states just follow the AFCO guidelines, which gives AFCO, a private nonprofit organization, nationwide influence, but there is no requirement to do so. AFCO partners with the FDA because the FDA has admitted that they have limited enforcement resources that are primarily focused on human food safety issues. So because the FDA doesn't have the manpower to oversee pet food, AFCO primarily creates examples of feed regulation that federal and state agencies can follow by publishing those model bills. These are standards of animal food guidelines and codes. AFCO also published recommended regulations to support model bills and how to supervise animal food at the regulatory level. AFCO, as you may already know, also establishes the levels of nutrients that a pet food must contain for different life stages, and they provide the feeding directions too. The FDA closely collaborates with them, especially with ingredient definition. So these two agencies work together to ensure that proposed new ingredients are proven to be safe. So if AFCO approves a pet food ingredient, then it's basically accepted by the FDA. But AFCO has no enforcement authority and doesn't provide any analytical testing on pet foods. Members of AFCO include officials from the FDA, the CVM, other state officials, and members of the pet food manufacturing industry. The complete and balanced statement on a pet food label is AFCO at work. And there are three standards where AFCO will recognize a pet food as safe and complete and balanced, or 100% nutrition. So here's the breakdown on how your pet food gets that AFCO approval. The three standards a company may pick from to receive the complete and balanced nutrition claim from AFCO on their food are these. 1. The food contains the proper amount of nutrients as determined by AFCO for the recommended life stage of the food, or essentially the food needs a standard chemical analysis and, well, that's pretty much it. If it meets the minimum requirements according to AFCO in this analysis, then it's good to go. 2. The manufacturer proves the nutritional adequacy by completing an AFCO-recognized feeding trial or protocol, which I'll go over that in a bit more detail in a second. Or 3, the food is nutritionally similar to a member of a product family that's already an existing AFCO-approved food. So in this case, no testing or analysis is done. The food just gets the complete and balanced label right out of the gate as long as it is similar to another food already on the market. Now, what is a AFCO feeding protocol? One alternative to using the AFCO nutrient profiles to receive approval for manufacturers is to complete a 6-month feeding trial. The criteria for this protocol, as set by AFCO in the simplest terms, are this. 1. A minimum of just 8 healthy dogs at least 1 year of age and of optimal body weight. 2. The test diet should be fed throughout the entire trial. 3. The test duration is 26 weeks or 6 months, and only 10 weeks for growth, which is puppy or kitten food, and reproduction, though most growth foods recommend feeding for 49 to 52 weeks and not just 10. Dogs can be free-fed or based on energy needs. 5. Clinical observations and measurements must be taken. These include individual daily consumption, individual body weight at beginning, weekly, and end of the trial, blood tests for 4 specific factors out of a potential 40, and complete physical examination at beginning and end of the test. Also, 25% of the dogs can be removed during the trial for non-nutritional reasons or for poor food intake. And of course, there's the criteria for the determination of success or failure. All dogs not removed for non-nutritional reasons or poor intake must successfully finish the study. And the test is a failure if there are signs of nutritional deficiency or toxicity, more than 15% loss of body weight in an individual, or the group average loses more than 10%. Oddly, there are no limits on how much weight they can gain. Or if the blood tests for hemoglobin, packed cell volume, albumin, and phosphatase exceed certain predetermined thresholds. So in a nutshell, if 6 animals for 6 months can eat the food without any major weight loss or any major blood chemistry changes, then the trial is a success and the diet is considered complete and balanced. I find this especially concerning because pet owners tend to keep their pets on these foods for much longer than 6 months at a time. Many owners may even have their dog on 1 or 2 foods for their whole lives. I did cut out some of the scientific language from the protocol criteria, such as the specific 4 blood tests used, which is out of 40 possible parameters that could be tested, because it can be a bit overwhelming for most people who are not accustomed to seeing such protocols, like myself. But if you'd like to look at the full outline and all its detail, they can be found online. To simplify, The protocol only requires 6 animals to finish and pass the trial based on physical observations, losing weight, obesifying is okay, and 4 blood parameters during a period of 6 months. The easiest and least expensive option, however, for receiving AFCO approval on your bag is by this means. When a pet food is grouped as part of a family of products that have already received AFCO's standard approval, then the new food can bypass most testing. AFCO regulations also allow manufacturers to change the amount of ingredients in the family as long as they stay within their minimum and maximum levels. This makes reacting to the market and quick production of new versions of a food a lot more possible without the time and expense of feeding trials. Because of the way the feeding trial and the chemical analysis and such is done, AFCO can unfortunately be manipulated into what is essentially a marketing tool. A company stating they perform AFCO feeding trials and formulate all of their products to meet or exceed required levels sounds good. However, you can see that there can be issues with the way the feeding trial is done, but also they could have ran 3 or 4 different iterations of a diet simultaneously through the trial, and in the end select the one that passes with the lowest possible cost, not even necessarily the best nutrition. And they only need to run and pass one trial this way for a whole product family, which means every other product in that family, say all the other flavors of one line of food, will get the AFCO approval without any testing done at all. So a company that meets or exceeds AFCO guidelines doesn't always mean it has gone through any testing trials or that it provides optimum nutrition beyond a 6-month time frame. Keep in mind, meeting AFCO standards is completely voluntary. Using their nutrition statement is not a requirement, but rather a tool to ensure your pet food at least appears to be complete and balanced. Some pet food manufacturers opt not to seek AFCO approval, and they will often cite the inadequacies and/or political nature of the organization, but overall, there are both, in the most simple of terms, good and bad foods that are AFCO approved, just as there are good and bad foods that aren't. AFCO approval states that it has the basic nutrition for your dog based on a variety of means, and we can see there are ways of pet food manufacturers making this work in their favor. AFCO's nutrient profiles are based on those created by the National Research Council and Committee on Animal Nutrition, or NRC. They review published research, both on processed foods and on whole foods, and then they generate reports that provide recommendations for the nutrient requirements of dogs and cats. This work may not always reflect what happens in the processed pet food world, as the studies done on whole foods are being used to formulate processed foods. AFCO requirements are slowly replacing NRC recommendations, and the nutrient profiles created by the NRC scientists are being altered to reflect the move away from fresh, real foods to processed and synthetically fortified nutrition, and its resulting loss of nutrients and the impact on digestibility. So AFCO nutrient profiles are potentially more adept at guiding highly processed foods like kibble and canned than the NRC standards are, which again are created by scientists researching published studies on mostly real food. One example of the move away from NRC standards is the reduction of recommended protein for adult maintenance and dogs, which they went from 22% down to 18%, which is a staggeringly low number. This is certainly an interesting move, as protein is the most expensive ingredient in pet foods. Moreover, AFCO doesn't regulate the source of the protein or other essential nutrients. The only requirement is that the manufacturer complies with AFCO's list of ingredient definitions. So theoretically, protein could come from feathers, beaks, feet, and as long as they're on an approved ingredient, then it can be added. In addition, formulation testing doesn't account for bioavailability of the nutrients in most foods. What this example comes down to is that just because a formulation contains a minimum amount of protein, as still shows its complete balance, doesn't mean the amount is based on the best science and published studies as provided by scientists in the field. And AFCO-based testing doesn't ensure the protein source is digestible or biologically available for the pet eating it. such as plant protein or low-quality animal parts. There are other agencies involved in the pet food industry as well that I have not mentioned yet. One is called the Pet Food Institute, or PFI. It's a trade organization that represents the dog, cat, pet food manufacturers. And they work closely with AFCO to evaluate current regulations and make recommendations for any changes. Members of the PFI include every major pet food manufacturer in the country, the majority of which are owned by Nestle Purina, Procter & Gamble, Colgate-Palmolive, and Mars. They support research and educate the public, and also serve as the voice of the industry for the FDA and AFCO, and many PFI members also serve on AFCO advisory boards. This again means that the very people that make the pet food are heavy influencers on the guidelines and recommendations of how the pet food is formulated and approved. The PFI has no direct regulatory powers over pet food production, testing, or their label claims. There's also the American Pet Products Manufacturers Association, or APPA, APA, which is made up of pet food manufacturers, importers, and livestock suppliers, and also contains members from all over the planet. It's a not-for-profit trade association dedicated to promoting the pet products industry. They conduct their own research, hold education seminars and conferences, including the Global Pet Expo, which is the largest annual pet industry trade show in the world. It also has its own government and regulatory affairs department, which is dedicated to identifying and responding to regulations and legislation. Similar to the PFI, it places pet food manufacturers as representatives on a variety of important AFCO advisory committees. There's also organizations such as the Pet Food Alliance, which is an organization comprised mainly of multiple veterinary associations whose goal is to provide optimal nutrition advice to consumers. However, the founding sponsors are Hill Science Diet, Nestle Purina, Procter & Gamble Pet Care, meaning that this is a huge group of veterinarians providing nutritional education that is being funded and sponsored by the largest pet food manufacturers themselves. It's another concerning conflict of interest. Another fact to note is that the FDA Food Safety Modernization Act, or FSMA, which was passed in 2011 by President Obama, puts a heavy emphasis on the safety of foods and was prompted by all the incidents of foodborne illness from 2000 to 2010. It was a shift in focus from responding to food contamination to trying to prevent it. Before it was passed, the FDA only had the power to recall a product after there were reported cases of sick pets or humans, and now they have far more power. In 2013, the FDA initially announced it would be pooling and testing pet foods. Under the FSMA, the FDA considers any food that tests positive for Salmonella, Listeria, or E. coli to be adulterated and requires the food to be recalled. This is particularly troublesome for raw food manufacturers, as the FDA makes no distinction between raw pet foods and cooked pet foods, with the exception that they only appear to be testing raw foods for contamination, which is an unprecedented show of bias against a specific type of pet food, and it's concerning because treats and dry foods have been shown to be a major source of pathogenic bacteria. So these are all of the major players when it comes to protecting your dog or cat's food. You can see that pet food manufacturers are extremely influential in most of these agencies and involved in almost every level. So when it comes down to it, all of this can potentially create some confusion and some problems that are nearly impossible for especially unsuspecting pet owners to navigate. So it is critical to understand the pet food industry and how it is regulated in order to best protect your pet's health and well-being, and I hope I was able to provide the necessary information so that you have that as a tool going forward. And that concludes the end of lesson 9. I really appreciate you coming and listening to me once more. Following will be a new segment of each of my podcasts going forward, which will be pre-recorded messages by myself and my partner, Jeremiah. So first will be Jared just kind of explaining who I am, what I do, and then I will have a pre-recording of my links and descriptions, as I promised earlier in my podcast, so that if you want to be able to find my Facebook pages or my Patreon, reach out to me, have any questions, check out my guides, anything, those links will be coming up shortly. And those will be at the end of each of my podcast episodes going forward. So, you know, at some point, this is going to sound like I know what I'm doing in terms of creating podcasts. Thank you again for listening. I appreciate all of you. Remember to feed your pets like you mean it, and nutrition is magic.
Hey listener, I'd like to tell you a bit about the Animal Nutrition Wizard. She is an independent pet nutrition coach and the host of this podcast, Trinity Thresher. She currently has certifications from Nina Liu and Holly and Hugo, 6 years of experience in the field, and does independent study and research. She provides coaching, consultations, guides, and more through donations only, whereas the average cost for a pet nutrition consultation ranges from $75 to $500. The ultimate goal is to create a nonprofit organization that provides these benefits on a larger scale, and to create a certification program for the Animal Nutrition Wizard's seal of approval for members of the pet food industry to strive to achieve. This seal would let pet owners know that products using it are safe and healthy. Your support is the driving force that helps to maintain and grow this dream. Thank you.
Links and descriptions. The Facebook group is where I answer your posted questions on a daily basis, and I'm currently working to build a set of free guides found on this group only for the curious pet owner who wishes to learn more about nutrition on their own time. The address for this group is www.facebook.com/groups/AskTheWizard. The Facebook page, where I host a weekly live Q&A session every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, also announce new podcast episodes, and throughout the occasional random tip of the day, is at www.facebook.com/AnimalNutritionWizard. You can also support me through a monthly donation at the tier of your choice, ranging from $3 a month, which I have deemed Magician Class, to $50 a month at Dragon Class at patreon.com/AskTheWizard. I will also have exclusive video posts for patrons only, and there are a limited number of hoodies and stickers for select classes. Lastly, I am working currently on building a website where I will have questionnaires and pet profiles to build for free that you will fill out, which will allow me to keep track of your pet's health and condition, and to provide ongoing, long-term support as needed, including nutritional coaching and even custom diets designed by myself just for your dog or cat. Thank you again for all of your support and for letting me help your pets and empower you with what I believe should be free knowledge for everyone. Remember, nutrition is magic.